It's The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. That was members of the Houston Ebony Opera performing their annual Christmas concert in 2018. Founded in 1983, the opera was created with the goal of showcasing Black opera singers who have been denied the range of opportunities afforded to their white counterparts. Joining me now is Dr. Jason Obey, the chair of the Department of Music at Texas Southern University and the artistic director of the Houston Ebony Opera Guild. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
What did the opera landscape look like in 1983 when the Houston Ebony Opera was founded, particularly when it came to roles for Black performers?
Well, it was mixed at that time. In 1983, there were certainly many well-known African-American classical singers who were participating in the opera world, notably Leontine Price, Shirley Verrett, Grace Bunbury. There were very few men who had that level of success. The only one that really comes to mind is George Shirley. Here in Houston, Robert Henry, who founded the Opera Guild in the 80s, was on the faculty at Prairie View A&M University, and he felt that he had so many very talented singers, and even those opportunities for emerging singers, young singers, in his view, were not equal. And he used his influence to start this group to provide a platform, a venue wherein they could be featured and that their talents could be exposed. And that's how the group started.
We've seen, I'm curious to know a little bit more about the role of Black male opera performers and roles for them, and as they've evolved over the years. I recall Norm Lewis being named the Phantom of the Opera here in New York. Was that a surprise for you? I mean, with a Black male lead and a white female love interest?
Well, it wasn't a surprise to me, but you talk about Norm Lewis, but also talking about the Phantom of Opera before that was Robert Guillaume singing that part, who's also an African-American man. I think about Diane Carroll, who we lost recently, as, you know, Norma Desmond in that character, which was so perfect for her personality and her way of being on stage. So I think that, in a way, opera has, and these are musical theater things we're talking about, in a way, opera has been more open to those kinds of things, even in the musical theater stage, I think, in some ways. But all those things are the case as society evolves and as we're used to seeing different kinds of things in our everyday lives, it opens up more. And, you know, the 2000s are different than the 80s. I think we have to acknowledge that evolution over this last, you know, couple of generations.
Well, speaking of that, this is this fall, 2019, the New York Metropolitan Opera announced that it will stage its first opera written by a Black composer. And are most of the major opera institutions in the United States still lagging behind when it comes to that type of representation? Who's writing and scoring these operas?
I think so. And I want to add into that who's conducting them and who makes the choices as to what's put on stage. Some of these decisions, I think, are made because of financial kind of considerations. Even in a large city like Houston, which is where I am, or New York City, these companies have fairly large budgets. And then when you compare them to what the regional opera houses are doing around the country, it is a chance to put on an opera by any new composer, whether he be Black or whatever he or she may be. And then it gets to be a question of who's going to come and see an unknown opera. Most people are going to choose you know, the operas that they know and that they grew to love, Verdi and Puccini and so forth, things that are tried and true. And the opera houses, I think, know that those are going to be things that make the money. And opera is expensive, and not that many people are supporting it financially. They've got to depend on donors and all that stuff. So if I'm going to take a chance on a new opera, is that going to be an opera of an unknown composer, or, you know, the black might be an issue because that's going to be even a more boutique audience if it's a black subject matter. Now, of course, a black composer can write about anything that someone else can write about as well. But those black stories. So I think a lot of things, decisions are made not necessarily because people in the decision-making process are racist or this or that, although, you know, that may be the case. I think it's often because people are concerned with, financial considerations and business kinds of considerations. And people are cautious because they want things to be successful and they want to make money.
Does that explain why Porgy and Bess is still the go-to black opera today? It's been put on this year at the Met. It's been on Broadway numerous times. And it was still, I mean, at the end of the day, it was written in the 1930s by an all-white creative team. And when we think about what it represents, I mean, it still draws crowds. But is there anything beyond Porgy and Bess?
Well, there are things out there, you know, and as the artistic director of the Houston Ebony Opera Guild, occasionally people send scores. Now, of course, we're just a poor little company. But sometimes I read through them and they're really wonderful. Some things by African-American composers on topics that are romantic or whatever. They may be historical stories and so forth. But these things take a lot of money and resources. But talking about Porgy in particular, black singers have long felt that Porgy and Bess is sort of a double-edged sword. You know, you can look at it in a couple of different ways. You know, Gershwin, obviously an immensely talented person who wrote very exciting, beautiful music. The storyline, although it draws on what some people might consider to be black stereotypes, a lot of black singers who received success got those first successes in Porgy and Bess. What one comes to terms with over time, you know, if you look at that opera, it's also true that the characters are very richly drawn. The music is very beautiful. And, you know, I think of Porgy as I would think of any major, almost Shakespearean kind of character in terms of his depth and his love for Bess and the story that it takes and the irony in the end and all that. But it is also true that a lot of black singers feel like, you know, once they get into the quote-unquote Porgy circuit, it's difficult to escape, and those same opera companies that would hire them to sing lead parts in Porgy would not necessarily hire them to do lead parts in other roles in those same opera houses.
Dr. Jason Obi is the chair of the Department of Music at Texas Southern University and the artistic director for the Houston Ebony Opera Guild. Jason, thanks so much for joining us.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.